Nacho Land Podcast with David Amoyano.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the second episode of the Calcio Land Podcast of the Week. So today, I have some cool stuff. We're going to wrap up Juve's big comeback win against Atletico on Monday. As we were recording, there was the news on Zidane. We'll touch upon that. We'll get to game predictions with our friend Thousand Names, since we have a weekend of Serie A before the international break, and we'll still do episodes during that as usual. We have our Twitter questions, and we're going to focus a lot on the derby between Milan and Inter. At the end of the podcast, we have a long interview with our dear friend Richard Hall, who we haven't had on in a while. I know it feels between the Juve win and the Ranieri at Roma that the derby is kind of getting a bit shortchanged, but we're going to have a lot of content on that with some of the questions and the interview with our friend Richard. But before we get to that, we are joined as usual by our co-host, producer, Alex Goldberg. So Alex, I'm going to ask you essentially the same question we debated on Monday. So we on Monday discussed who had the most at stake for Juve in the match against Atletico. Is it the club itself? Is it Allegri? Is it Ronaldo? So now I'm going to ask you, out of these three entities and parties and persons, who has gained the most from this comeback, in your opinion?
This question really has some longevity to it. I love it. So I'm going to say, David, in this order, I'm going to say Ronaldo actually gained the most, which I'm surprising myself even saying that. I'm going to say Allegri gained the second most. I'm going to say the club gained the third most, and I'll work in reverse order. For the club, it was a big win. I mean, it was a big, big win, obviously, but let's not be a prisoner of the moment. Right now, it really is all about Juve winning the Champions League. We know they can go deep in the Champions League. It's about winning the Champions League. So it was a great, great victory. However, let's just pretend the next tie they get, they lose. Well, it's once again going to be about Juve not winning the Champions League. So that's why I'm having the club third. I have Allegri second because for a little bit of the same reason as I just gave to the club. Well, let's see what happens in the next tie. And also, conversely, I would say that if Juve didn't get out of this, I still think Allegri getting sacked or getting fully blamed would have been a little bit unfair, because I think Atletico Madrid are a damn good team. I know they're a damn good team. And I just don't think it would have been the same as if Juve lost to an FC Porto, no offense to them. So I think Allegri gained a lot here because obviously he's taking Juve one step further and they're not crashing out of the Champions League as many Juve fans and people all over were saying. So he certainly gained something here, Allegri. But I'm putting Ronaldo number one in terms of gaining the most because, I mean, this night really was all about Cristiano Ronaldo. This is what he was brought to Juve for. I mean, it was really just out of a movie. You're down 2-0 in the aggregate. You obviously need three to win. And because you didn't score any away goals, if Atletico score one, well, you know what happens there. You're in deep doo-doo. So Ronaldo, 3, Atletico Madrid, 2. I mean, he was superb. And I say he had the most to gain because, well, I mean, he got the win. I mean, it was a good team performance. Bernardeschi was good. I could go on and on and on. But he got all three goals. He was the score line. He was brought to the club to do that. He said that after the game. I'm sure everyone heard that. He was brought to the club to do that, and he did it. And David, in my opinion, we can have the GOAT. We can have the greatest of all time conversation some other day. I don't love it. I know you don't really like that conversation. Forget that. But in terms of Champions League GOAT, I'm a little bit closer to saying that Ronaldo really is the best all-time in the Champions League. The titles, the goals, it's really hard to argue. And even if you don't want to have that conversation, he just cemented himself once again as an unbelievable footballing legend, as a Champions League legend, and David, as one of the clutchest athletes of all time. So I'm saying Ronaldo gained the most, but it was a really tough one to answer. So that's my take, David. What about you?
So we're definitely on the same page on Ronaldo being number one. I think it's impossible to argue against that. I'm going to change, though, the order. I'm going to have Juve second. I'm going to have Allegri last, which might be surprising to some. And I'll tell you why, because, you know, I really like to see how Allegri is perceived both within the Juve bubble and outside. And I'll tell you, for me, as you know, and this was a tactical masterpiece by Allegri, and we'll get into it a little bit more in the questions. But to me, it was very interesting that within the Juve bubble, there were the Allegri defenders, and I'm going to kind of count myself into that, that you're like, okay, yeah, we've seen him do this in the Champions League before. I thought there were really some pretty brilliant things that he did. I think Emre Can is kind of like a fake center back that played in the midfield, was really pretty brilliant. The lineup really, really worked in general. But I think within the Juve bubble, the Allegri detractors to them felt vindicated and were like, hey, we've been saying this all along. If Juve played to their strength and used all their offensive weapons well, this is what you would get. So in a way, those who criticized them felt vindicated. I don't think their opinion ultimately really changed that much. They were kind of like, see, I've been telling you this all along. I think outside the Juve bubble, win or lose, eliminated or not, I still think Allegri would have still been perceived as a really top manager. You know, sometimes I see the conversations on your Twitter timeline or in general how outside of Italy Allegri is perceived radically different. So for me, nothing really changed for him, although he deserves a lot of credit. For Juve, financially, obviously, this was a making it to the next round, especially with Roma out. They get more of the market pool. So big win financially. We've been talking about this on Monday. I had said that financially getting eliminated in this round would be a big problem for Juve because their costs on amortization and gross wages went up a lot. Yeah, they have the new kit deal with Adidas, but they actually really, their expenses went up a ton as well. So that helps. You look at the landscape of the Champions League, and I know Barcelona was struggling there for a little bit. They went out this round. We knew one between Bayern and Liverpool was going to go out, and Liverpool made it through. In a second, I'm going to get your opinion because you follow these other leagues, especially the Premier League, and we have so many of those teams still in. So I'm curious to get your take. But when I look at the landscape of the Champions League, it's we don't have Real Madrid, we don't have PSG, we don't have Bayern. And when I look at the teams that are left, I think they match up with Juve a lot better than Atletico because Atletico and Juve are pretty similar teams. This was a very tough matchup. And look, aside from Porto, I think pretty much any team Juve gets in the next round is going to be tough. But the way they play, I think, really plays to Juve's strength. So I think Juve have to be very happy to have a legitimate chance at winning the Champions League. And this was really the definition of a fino alla fine, which is one of the slogans that Juve is known for, one of their mottos. I always say it's easy for Juve fans to be vincere l'unica cosa che conta fans, which is the other slogan, which is like winning is the only thing that matters. But fino alla fine, until the end, is support your team till the end. Don't give up. This was really the definition of what that win was about. So Juve second. And Ronaldo, of course, has to be number one for a lot of the same reasons that you said. Obviously, this is why he was brought in, made a huge difference. I think this is going to put at bay the talk that, you know, it wasn't worth it for Juve to bring him in, at least for the time being. I think there was already talk, oh, he's 34. Was this really worth it? That type of win, really, really a great moment. If you're a Juve fan, this is a match that you'll be talking about for a really long time. So, you know, I don't like the GOAT debate. I don't like debating players from different eras. So maybe this comes off as a little hypocritical. But I think if you wanted to be a person to make the case that Ronaldo is the best player in Juve's history, I think you can make a great case, and you could have probably said that on the day that he arrived. Juve has had a lot of Ballon d'Or winners on the team. They've won it at the club for the first time. They had never acquired a player that had won it before. I could be wrong, but off the top of my head, that is, I think that's what it is. And he really established himself as really iconic player at the club for this win because it was really something else. So I have it in that order. We disagree on second and third, but definitely on Ronaldo. Very well done on his part. So, Alex, as I mentioned, I want to ask you, because we have a lot of Premier League teams, and one of our listeners has a good question for you at the end. But I want to ask you now, when you look at the landscape, give me two or three teams that you think Juve should really try to avoid in the draw coming up next week.
Yeah, it's a good question. First one, David, Barcelona. Not a hot take there, but man, and I know it was Lyon that they played, but Barcelona looked really damn good. In my opinion, they're the team to avoid for anyone. Messi, I mean, you know, it's just, we're blessed. We're absolutely blessed to be living in this time period that we even get to debate Ronaldo versus Messi. Obviously, Ronaldo and what happened, that game was more exciting. Ronaldo's hat trick was more necessary, but Messi responds with 2 goals, 2 assists, but they're clicking. Suarez had a good game. Coutinho had a goal. Rakitic was really playing well. Busquets, I mean, they're really looking good. Ousmane Dembele, when he's coming off the bench, Barcelona's a dangerous, dangerous team. So Juve really, you know what? Save Messi versus Ronaldo for the Champions League final anyway. If you're Juve, avoid Barcelona. The second team I would avoid, Manchester City, because of their depth, David. Now, they're fighting right now with Liverpool for the Premier League title, but Manchester City are blessed with depth. I mean, they have extraordinary depth. Their B squad is some people's A squad. So the reason why I say Manchester City and not a Liverpool is, well, Liverpool are heavily, heavily dependent on their front three of Mane, Firmino, and Salah. Manchester City, sure, you want Aguero in there, but they can change their front three and almost be just as dangerous. So I would say Barcelona, Manchester City, and sneaky shout, David. I'm not going to say any of the other Premier League teams because I wouldn't be that afraid of Manchester United if I'm Juve. Wouldn't be afraid of Spurs. And as I said, I wouldn't be afraid of Liverpool if I'm Juve, that is. Sneaky shout, Ajax. The way they played against Real Madrid, they have so much young talent. And yeah, young talent on the big stage, it can falter. But the young talent is really used to playing with each other. They have great, great chemistry. And you saw they went into that second leg against Real Madrid down. They're not afraid of the big stage. So I would watch out for Ajax as a sneaky shout. But Barcelona is the one I would most avoid if I'm Juve. All right, David. So now that we've addressed that top segment, let's do what we always do in a Thursday episode. Let's look ahead to the Serie A weekend with our game predictions with you and Thousand Names. So who do we got for this weekend?
So I appreciate your analysis, and I want to, you know, point out that when I said that Juve matches up well against these teams, it's really the style of play. I'm not disputing the strength of these teams. Like, it strikes me that almost all these teams left play really offensively, and we know Allegri, as much as that was a counterintuitive from his style on Tuesday, likes to play the counter. So good analysis there. So now let's get to our picks with Thousand Names. So we have Serie A this weekend before the international break. So let me make sure I have the right ones. Okay, so first match, Juve traveling to Genova to face Genoa at the Marassi Stadium. So we have Thousand Names has it as 1-1, goals by Pjanic and Criscito. You guys know by now, prediction, Ronaldo sbaglia rigore. And I have to tell you, when Ronaldo took that penalty for the win, I was like just waiting for Thousand's prediction to come true. So it didn't happen there, but he says it's going to happen against Genoa. If you're a Juve fan, I think you'll take that one. And he says that Genoa manager Prandelli is going to give a football lesson to both Cholo Simeone and Allegri. And he said Juve is focused on the Champions League that they won't win anyways, but that Sturaro is organizing Il Biscotto. As you know, that's in Italy. That's the term they use in Italy when two teams agree to a draw. So in Italian, Genoa Juve 1-1. Pjanic, Criscito, Ronaldo sbaglia rigore, lezione di Prandelli al Cholo, Simeone ad Allegri, Juve con la testa, una Champions che comunque non vincerà, Sturaro organizza il biscotto, fidatevi. So last week I agreed with all of Thousand's picks. I'm going to continue this trend and I'm going to agree on the draw. I think Juve We're going to have somewhat of a letdown game. I would imagine Allegri is going to rotate players again. I think this is going to be somewhat of a letdown game. Genoa still needs results to avoid relegations. On the topic of rotation, I just want to point out our friend Adam Digby had a very interesting thread on what he thinks Allegri should do with player rotations and, you know, really rest players, try different things. And another friend of the show, Yanis Mikhailik, also pointed out, though, that a lot of the times why managers for top clubs like this don't rotate that much is a lot of the players do have significant financial incentives for match played, goals, and whatnot. So I thought that was an interesting conversation that I hadn't thought about that with player rotation. So I'm going to agree with Thousand. I'm going to have it as 0-0 between Juve and Genoa. So the next prediction that we have is Napoli at home against Udinese. Thousand has Napoli winning 6-0, braces each for Insigne, Koulibaly. Good luck with that one. Ruiz, he says Ancelotti is going to play tennis with Udinese coach Davide Nicola and that Lorenzo is going to gain back his stadium, and that's Insigne. Although he sent me this before Napoli's match today, I think Insigne is hurt. By the way, kudos to Napoli for getting past this round. I'm very curious to see what they do in the Europa League. I'm going to have Napoli winning, not as decisively. I'll have it 2-0, and I'm going to give goals to Mertens and Fabian Ruiz as well, who is becoming one of my favorite players in Serie A. And last one, you saw this one coming. It had to be the derby. So Thousand has Milan-Inter as 0-0, and he's going to say this is the derby of boredom. And let's be honest, a lot of the recent derbies have kind of the Madonnina have been this way. And his comment is Marotta doesn't understand anything about football anymore. I think this is since he left Juve. And that Icardi is going to enjoy this boring match in the stands with his wife, Wanda. Maybe there might be a sexual connotation there, but I think Thousand thinks Icardi is going to enjoy Inter struggles. And that he said Spalletti is ridiculous. So in Italian, Milan-Inter 0-0, il derby della noia, Marotta non capisce niente di calcio, Icardi gode con Wanda in tribuna, Spalletti ridicolo. I hate to agree, 2 weeks in a row, same picks. I'm going to have it as a draw as well. I think this is a typical, this is actually a derby late in the season with big implications in the standings for both teams. I don't think we've had that in a while. And I think this is going to be the Italian saying meglio due feriti che un morto, which is, you know, better to have two people that are injured over one dead. And I think that's what's going to happen as well. And you'll hear Richard Hall's prediction at the end of our lengthy interview on the derby. So those are our game picks. Thank you, Thousand Names. And thank you for keeping so many of our listeners on pins and needles when Ronaldo took the penalty against Atletico. I enjoyed getting some tweets about that. Next up, our favorite part of the segment, the Twitter questions from our listeners. As usual, you can send them in using the CalcioLand hashtag. We take questions on Serie A. We got quite a few on the Champions League today, as you could expect it, on transfers, TV, music, films. You guys know I love the pop culture ones. Today I didn't put any to make it flow a little better with the derby, but since we have an international break coming, we'll be fielding more of those. So I have some in reserve, but send me some more. But let's get to the ones tonight. Which ones are we going to go over now, Alex?
All right, David, let's start off with this one. Obviously, the way Allegri had Juve play in the return leg against Atletico was great, but why can't he have Juve play like this more often?
So as I mentioned at the top, you know, to me, the opinion that within the Juve bubble, nothing really changed on what you think on Allegri. So if you're a critic, this match is frustrating and you feel vindicated. Why doesn't Juve do this all along? So if that's your take, you're like, it's kind of like how a husband who's in the doghouse with the wife and is making a last second attempt to save the marriage. So starts buying flowers, playing romantic music, saying, oh, let's go to the movies. Let's go watch Mamma Mia. Let's go to a musical. All of a sudden starts calling the mother-in-law because his back is against the wall. And we've seen Allegri do this before. He's had some great comebacks that fell just short, but now he has Ronaldo and got him over the hump. If you're more of an Allegri defender, you can say, well, you know, maybe Allegri is like a great NFL head coach who during the regular season doesn't show you his really good plays. He saves them for the playoffs because he really wants to use it when it matters. And I think that's an overly optimistic take. But if you wanted to point to it, you could say that. It also reminded me a little bit, like, I'm really old. Larry Bird was my first sports hero in any sport. And there was a game where Larry Bird, just for make it fun on himself, like, he just played with his left hand, and he was a righty because he was saving his right hand for the, he did that against the Blazers, and he was like, I'm just going to save my right hand for when we face the Lakers. So I think you can really look at it in one of two ways. I think ultimately, if Juve wins the Champions League, people are going to paint it, oh, look, Allegri was a genius. He saved all his best plays and his best formations for when it really mattered. If you're an Allegri critic, you're going to be like, hey, you know, he only did this when his back is against the wall. He shouldn't do this just for the return leg. I have a feeling the truth's somewhere in the middle. But again, to me, the opinion of a Juve fans or even people within Serie A fans really hasn't changed on Allegri ultimately.
All right, David, this next question, everybody wants to know. Now that Juve pulled off the comeback, do you still think Allegri will move on after this season?
So I've changed my tune a little bit, and I have to say, you know, had Juve been bounced, I would have been really fairly certain he was gone. But now I have to say that another wrinkle to this, more than this match, I would say is the fact that Zidane went back to Real Madrid really threw a big wrinkle in this. I think Zidane would have really been the ideal replacement for Allegri. I think Juve fans would have absolutely bought in. Look, Juve almost always goes for an Italian manager. The exceptions are people that have the Juve DNA, and Zidane won the Champions League with Ronaldo. Him being off the table had a big effect, I think, on Allegri, and also because maybe the Real Madrid job would have been something for that would have been appealing to Allegri if he went deep with Juve and say, hey, you know what? I'm going to go for a new challenge. That job is off the table as well. So I could see that being a big difference. I think you look at the other candidates left for Juve, and let's take Guardiola at his word. And he was very strongly denied that he's going to go to Juve. And look, you know, I always take that stuff with a grain of salt, but let's take him at his word. Who does that leave? It leaves Deschamps, who already coached Juve. Again, although he's not Italian, he had the Juve DNA because he played this. And Antonio Conte, and I don't think there's much appetite within Juve fans for either of them. I think if you told even the biggest Allegri critic, these are the two alternatives, I think there are some who would take Conte. I'd be very surprised if you find anyone that would want Deschamps, even if he won, even after winning the World Cup. So I think that has changed my mind. Now with Zidane at Real Madrid, even let's say Allegri wins the Champions League at Juve and is like, you know what, I'm going to leave on top. Realistically, what comparable jobs really are there better? So on Monday, I would have said, you know, 25 to 30% that Allegri is Juve's manager next season. Now I'm going to bump that up to 60% at this time.
All right, David, how about this? Spinazzola was phenomenal the other day. Is he ready for the national team? Is wingback the thinnest position on the transfer market?
So let's answer the first question. The last question first. Is wingback the thinnest position on the transfer market? I've been saying that for a really long time, and specifically left back, I would say, even more so. There just aren't that many good ones, and the clubs that have them are very reticent to get rid of them. And even right back is pretty thin. And this question came from an Inter fan, and I think we can see why with the way the season has been going for them. As far as Spinazzola, yeah, he was really excellent. And Allegri had said that he was kind of hoping that there would be, you know, like someone who really didn't have much experience, maybe wouldn't really feel the pressure because he was just like so new, and Spinazzola had come back from an injury. And I thought he was really outstanding. I'm going to say with Bernardeschi and Emre Can, after Ronaldo, of course, that's a given. They were really the most decisive players on the pitch. I've been a Spinazzola fan for a while. Alex, cover your ears. I'm going to go as far as saying that I thought that performance from Spinazzola was better than almost anything I've seen from Alessandro in the past two seasons, even. Now, again, prisoner of the moment, small sample size. Let's see if he can sustain it. But that was really an excellent performance. And a few weeks ago, I think, Alex, someone asked us about, you know, who would be the ideal left back for the Italian national team with Mancini. And, you know, there's Justice for Emerson. There's Biraghi. There's Criscito. I think Spinazzola is a very good contender for this position, and really a player that Juve can really groom. I'm not saying maybe, you know, maybe Alexandro is something that they consider moving in the summer. He does have a lot of market. I know you'd fly to Turin to personally bring him to London if he was on the market. So let's see. I don't want to be a prisoner of the moment, but that was really a very good performance. And people that followed him at Atalanta, I don't think were that surprised. Maybe him doing it on that stage, but not the ability, that's for sure.
Actually, David, I'm just now going to start bad-mouthing Alexandro just so I can drive his price down and I can change the narrative on him so he becomes more available. But no, Spinazzola was really good the other day. And someone else who was really good the other day was Bernardeschi. What a run he had that drew that pen. So the question is, now that Bernardeschi had a performance for the ages playing next to Ronaldo and Mandzukic, where does that leave Paulo Dybala? And what is ultimately Dybala's best position anyway?
So I have a lot of thoughts on that. So, yeah, Bernardeschi was brilliant. And I'm going to be honest, I wasn't the hugest fan of his when he arrived at Juve, got off to a strong start this season. There were a lot of reports, a lot of Juve insiders that said if there was one player that really rubbed off his work at Ronaldo, really impacted on Juve with his work ethic, it was Bernardeschi. And I think we really saw he's just been for a while a much better fit next to Ronaldo and Mandzukic. And there's a lot of Juve fans that criticized, you know, Allegri's lineup in the first leg. I think the Cancelo De Sciglio one's a very valid point. I wouldn't say Allegri was a coward, though, in the first leg, because he started Dybala over Bernardeschi, and I'd say Dybala is maybe even more of an offensive player than Bernardeschi. So let's go to Dybala. First, I'll answer the last question first. What's the ideal position for Dybala? Let's look at his track record. At Palermo, as a central striker, playing in front of Vasquez, absolutely devastating. That's where he broke out. Juve signed him, but every top Premier League club was after him, so was PSG. So central striker with a trequartista right behind him. But I thought at Juve, his best moments were in a two-striker formation, especially playing next to Mandzukic. I thought they really had a nice partnership. So when I think of Dybala, and it's kind of counterintuitive because of his body type, you know, he's not the biggest guy in the world. I think he's either a central striker or a striker in a two-man up front formation, and there aren't that many managers that use that. I think he's definitely not a natural winger in a 4-3-3. He's not an ideal trequartista. Allegri's been kind of trying to reinvent him in a kind of position, no man's land, where he can kind of roam a little bit what Messi does on Barca. That doesn't seem to have really worked out. So I'll say, you know, while Bernardeschi is the player that was most positively impacted by Ronaldo, you can make a great case that Dybala is the exact opposite. So where does that leave Dybala? It's an interesting question. You know, right now, I think in the next rounds, Allegri would be crazy not to start Bernardeschi with Mandzukic and Ronaldo. But beyond that, Juve has to figure out what are they going to do, because Ronaldo and Mandzukic aren't the youngest players. I think Dybala can be their main striker once those guys really start, you know, their performances start going down. But is there patience to wait? Can they afford to keep all three? You know, I could see a club like Bayern, who really needs to redo their front line and who has a great relationship with Juve, going forward. We know the clubs in the Premier League have been interested in him in the past. We know Dybala, you know, it seems he'd like to play in Spain if he were to leave. So let's see. I think it's an interesting scenario. I think in the short term, Dybala is going to be at the outside looking in, but Juve then has to figure out, okay, can he be our big star once Ronaldo's 36, and Mandzukic, you know, leaves or is more of a bench player. So an interesting situation here, but I wouldn't assume that just because if, say, Bernardeschi starts the rest of the way in the Champions League, that it automatically means that Dybala's gone as well.
All right, David, how about someone that almost had a massive goal and cannot buy alcohol in the United States? Should Moise Keane look to move away from Juventus in the summer to fulfill his potential?
So actually, one of our listeners suggested that he could have an impact in this match, and he almost did with the game winner. So look, I think, you know, it's an interesting conundrum. It goes back to what I just said a minute ago. There's a lot of older strikers on Juve, Dybala and Moise Keane. Maybe in a couple of years, that's your striking partnership for Juve. It doesn't sound like the worst thing in the world for me. In the short term, though, I could see Moise Keane either bringing a huge plusvalenza to Juve. You know, he's considered a homegrown player, would be a huge profit. Maybe Juve's like, hey, we'll hold on to Dybala, we'll sell Keane. We can make a big profit for with him there. That does bring value. I'm sure most Juve fans would love to hold on to him. Or there was already talk that Moise Keane was going to be loaned out in the summer and even in January, and he stayed. And I think Juve too wanted him to be around Ronaldo, practice with him and learn from him. But maybe in the summer, they loan him. And then to me, it's interesting. What makes more sense? Do you loan him to Serie A club so he gets experience in Serie A? Or do you loan him to a team abroad that is in the Champions League? Because we know that's where Juve really needs the help, so he gets experience there. I think the fact that Mino Raiola's his agent is going to benefit Juve if they sell him. He's going to get a big return. And if Moise Keane and Raiola want to keep him at Juve, his influence at the club is strong. So this is, as we would say, a good problem to have for Juve to have all these talented players. My guess, one way or another, Moise Keane is going to be on another team next season. It remains to be seen if it's on loan or on a permanent move.
All right, how about this? When was the last time an Italian team dominated a Champions League game at the same level that Juve did against Atletico?
I think almost everyone's gut reaction, and was mine when this arrived, was Roma's big win against Barcelona last year. But the question is dominating performance, and I think Roma, the result was really impressive. I don't want to take anything away. They were huge underdogs. That was a huge moment. I think Di Francesco is going to cherish that forever. But I think that had maybe Barcelona kind of choked. The result was shocking and great. But I think it was Juve's match against Real Madrid last year when they were eliminated. And I go back to what I said a few times on the podcast. Having Ronaldo was the difference between an amazing comeback, which they almost did against Real Madrid, and against Bayern, both away matches, and having Ronaldo to get you over the hump. So I'm going to say it was that match that Juve played at the Bernabeu when they gave the penalty in the last minute of the match.
All right, I'm going to move to my buddy. Do you agree that Alvaro Morata's performance in Turin was representative of his devotion to Juventus?
And no, it wasn't Thousand Names who sent this question or used the burner. Maybe it was a burner account, but this sounds like a conspiracy that Thousand would do. I have to say, no, I wouldn't go that far. But, I mean, you've seen it, Alex, better than me, that Morata, I mean, I'm a fan, but he's not the most mentally strong type of guy. I think the moment really caught up to him. And it's kind of surprising in a way, because Juve fans remember Morata as an incredibly clutch player in the Champions League. And I think a lot of Juve fans, when they saw him go to Atletico Madrid, were kind of worried. And even our friend Carlo Garganese tweeted, oh, maybe Juve made a mistake. Higuain to Chelsea, Morata to Atletico Madrid. He could take him out and whatnot, but he really fell short. And interestingly, on Di Marzio's site, and I know they're very close there with Morata, there was this story that Diego Simeone told Morata, you cannot have any contact with Juve, with their fans, or anything on the day of the match. The day before, I mean, he has a lot of close ties to the city and the club. He was there for a few seasons, and he told them on the day of the match, like even on the bus going from the hotel to the stadium, if Juve fans wave at you, he goes, I want you just to ignore them. And as much as I like Morata, and I still do, I think his mental fragility and the moment really caught up to him. So I still have faith in him. You know, that's one of my takes that has really aged the worst, because I thought he was going to do really well at Chelsea and he didn't. But yeah, I don't think there was you know, trying to help you. But I just think the moment really caught up to him.
Yeah, that's it. Mental fragility. That's his weakness. It certainly is. All right, David, this is a good one. Sarri, Conte, Mourinho. Where will they end up at the start of next season?
So I'm going to get your take on Sarri in a second. I know last time we were on, we talked about it, you put it at 50-50. I know Chelsea had a big win today. You're much more in the Chelsea bubble, but sometimes maybe being outside the bubble helps. I'm going to say it's more likely than not that Sarri is going to be Chelsea's manager next season. I know there's still a lot at stake, but I think, you know, if I had to bet right now, I would say Chelsea. I know there's reports of him talking to Roma. I'm still kind of skeptical on the fit there. So I'm going to say Sarri at Chelsea. And after I answer the rest, I want to get your take on that. I'm still going with Conte at Inter. We're recording this right as Inter's finishing their match in the Europa League. It looks about to be bounced. I think it's very likely that Conte is going to be at Inter next season with Marotta there. I think it's the perfect situation for him. A very good squad, team that needs to be rebuilt, like mentally too. I think it's just the perfect situation for him. And the last one, Mourinho, is really interesting because here we go back to the Zidane effect. Like Mourinho, there was a lot of people that expected him to be the manager this week at Real Madrid, and that's off the table now. Maybe Inter's a slight chance. I think, you know, if their former president Moratti was there, he'd already be the manager there right after he lost the job at Manchester United. So I don't know, Mourinho. Like, I'm just going to spitball. Maybe PSG, maybe Bayern Munich. I just don't know how much appetite there is for him at a club. I think at clubs that haven't had him before, you know, we know Florentino Perez loved him. There's the close ties to Inter. You know, my dream is him at Roma, but that's a dream. It just doesn't fit logically. I'm going to say, though, gun to the head, it wouldn't shock me if he's the manager of Portugal's national team. I think that actually might be a good fit for him. He can do some TV on the side, coach there. If I was Mourinho, that's actually what I would do. So let me get your take on Sarri and feel free to weigh in on the others. As it stands now, I know you're very passionate with Chelsea. They had a good performance today. What percentage do you have Sarri at Chelsea next season?
65. I have him staying at Chelsea at 65% now. So yes, up from 50%. Good win, as you said today. So progressing in the Europa League really was not necessarily about that. You kind of knew they'd progress in the Europa League, but he finally started the two players that all Chelsea fans wanted him to start, Loftus-Cheek and Hudson-Odoi. And that matters apparently to the board. So, David, here's my scenario where Maurizio Sarri is not manager next season of Chelsea. And now it's a very specific scenario that Chelsea do not get Champions League football next year. And Chelsea's transfer ban this coming summer is not frozen, is not lifted. So I do not think he'll be the manager of Chelsea if there's no Champions League football next year and there's no ability to make moves this summer, because that will be kind of taking a step back, a little bit building the team. And I don't think Sarri is the right manager for that. I think in that scenario, they'll have to lean on youth. They'll have to kind of accept that they're not going to win a trophy. And I don't think Sarri would be the manager in that scenario. But if they do get top four, if they get Champions League football, I definitely think Sarri will be back, because that was the objective from the start. And I love.
Okay.
Go ahead, finish up. Yeah, I still love, David, the shout for Conte at Inter. I mean, if they can keep Skriniar, having a back three of Godin, Skriniar, and De Vrij for Antonio Conte, I know that people think I just hate Conte. Not true at all. And I'm certainly admitting of how damn good of a manager he is tactically, and especially with a back three. Oh, that'd be perfect. And I also love the Portugal shout for Mourinho. So there you go.
All right. So Daily Star, you have my permission to say that Alex Goldberg said 65 for Sarri, and I authorize you to say that both of us said Conte at Inter is likely in a good fit.
There you go. It'll be in the Friday paper. All right, David, next Twitter question. Should Roma look for another sporting director or promote from within?
Yeah, we've talked about this a little bit before. I've said it. I think if Roma can get Corvino, who's at Fiorentina and is great at discovering talents, I think he's not a sexy name like Monchi, but he does the Monchi business a lot better. He's a great fit. I also would love for Sabatini to come back to Roma. I know he's had health issues and whatnot. I think Monchi didn't replace him nearly as well. I think Sabatini, people would love him in Rome. So short of those two coming, I think they should promote from within. We've talked about, you know, this being Rome and the emperors with the triumvirate. I would go with Frederic Massara, who's been was the second in command with Monchi and Sabatini. Totti having a bigger role. And again, I'd be very curious to see what type of impact that has. Maybe more players stay in Rome. And the third one is Balzaretti, the former Italy player, who's a former Roma player, has been a director there. So short of Corvino and Sabatini, I'm going with that triumvirate. I think they should consider promoting from within. I know they've been linked with some foreign sporting directors. That's the last thing I would do if I'm Roma. So, Alex, so another question for you, and this comes from a loyal listener of the show, Juan Aguarevere. I hope I'm pronouncing that name correctly. And he said, Alex, are you rooting for one of the Premier League teams left on the Champions League to win the trophy? He says, it doesn't have to be a specific one, just one for the league. I think I know the answer here, but I'm going to ask you, are you rooting for one of them to win this?
Yeah, David, I'm a hard no. I'm a hard no. Listen, you're that much of a Chelsea nut like I am, you do not root for another Premier League club to hoist the Champions League trophy. What I will say is I am rooting for all of them to go as far as possible so they all can get tired and screw up in the Premier League, but no chance am I rooting for one of them to actually win the Champions League. Already a good representation for the Premier League, but nope, don't want any of them winning the Champions League, especially Liverpool. All right, David, next one. Who deserves more credit for Milan's season? Leonardo, Gattuso, or the January signings?
Good question. So, I mean, I kind of lump in the January signings with Leonardo, though with the caveat that Leonardo originally brought in Higuain, then that didn't work out. He pivoted and brought in Piontek. So I guess you could put the January signings as their own thing, and maybe they would be the top one. But I kind of see them connected to Leonardo, especially Paqueta, because we know Leonardo's a great scout in Brazil. And so far, that one has really worked out. I've been a big fan of Gattuso. I'm going to give him the most credit because, again, it goes back to all the difficulties that he had to navigate through, change in ownership, the Higuain situation, all the injuries in the fall, integrating new players. He really fixed that defense really well. So I'm going to put him at the top. I know there are some Milan fans who don't like him, and I think maybe as they prefer to be right than anything else. I think Leonardo deserves a lot of credit. You know, those moves have worked out. Granted, some of the summer ones, maybe not so much, but the ones in January certainly. But Gattuso's the one that had to integrate those players with very little time, and I think he's done a great job. So I'm going to have a Gattuso number one out of this list.
All right, well, that segues perfectly into our last Twitter question for this episode. If Piontek, Paqueta, and Bakayoko continue their form into next season, do you think their value will double on top of what Milan paid for them?
So interesting question, because it's specifically into next season. So I would say Piontek right now, he might have already doubled his transfer value. Came in for 35 million, but I will point out that Milan paid that in one installment. So that 35 million is an expensive 35 million. But still, you can make a great case that a club that has seen him perform at a top club like Milan with the pressure that comes there would say, you know what, with his age, I think he's 24, might be even younger than that, 70 million in this market for a striker. I think he's already there. Now, the question is, if he continues this form into next season, that's assuming he continues that, it might even become more than that. It's been really, really impressive. Paqueta, too, I think they brought him for 30 million plus bonuses. He's very young, the type of midfielder that Milan has really, really lacked for a while. So, I could see him. He's an offensive midfielder. Those are the types of positions that go for a lot. Now, Bakayoko is an interesting one because Bakayoko is the one that we have a bigger sample size at Milan. He's been absolutely sensational since mid-October or November. Let's say since then, he's been really, really excellent. The only reason why I am maybe a little more concerned about doubling his transfer value is his option to buy is 40 million. He's going to be 25 in the summer, so just entering his prime. His position, though, defensive midfielder off the top of my head, I was trying to find the comp for a similar amount. I couldn't come up with one. I definitely think you can make a case if he keeps playing this way into next season. Definitely that option to buy is a bargain and he'd be worth more. So I'd be the most reticent out of those three would be him. But definitely right now that 40 million looks very fair. And, you know, say he had another great season. I don't see why Milan wouldn't be able to at least get 60, 70 million. But more importantly, Milan needs to focus more on we need to keep all these players. So Milan's really in the right direction. So good to have your players be worth a lot. But if you're a Milan fan, you want them to perform so they can stay, so they can be the building blocks for the team. So this is a perfect segue. We didn't do any of the pop culture ones because I want to keep covering the derby. One of our listeners, a loyal listener, pointed out that, hey, on a lot of podcasts, the derby is kind of getting the shaft because of the Champions League and Roma with Ranieri. So we wanted to do a lot on Milan's real and the derby between Milan and Inter. There was no better person than Richard Hall to cover both teams. Now, one caveat, I recorded this with him yesterday, and especially at Inter, one day with Inter is like a dog year compared to a human year. Like that's a lot of time for Inter. So if some of the stuff sounds a little bit weird in relations, especially to the Europa League result, that's why. So Richard did a fantastic job. He's been a really outstanding guest. I kind of forgot how good he is. So I think you'll really enjoy it. So with the Derby della Madonnina coming up, we wanted a guest that is well-versed on both Milan and Inter to help us preview this really exciting match with big implications in the standings. And I couldn't think of anyone better than our great friend of the show, Richard Hall, who is based in England, but is very well-versed with both teams from Milan. You guys know him from our podcast, but more importantly, he's a chief correspondent for Football Italia. He's the creator of one of my favorite sites, Gentleman Ultra, which is about the history of Italian football, the culture, everything that makes calcio unique. Those of you in the United States have heard him frequently on Sirius XM, where he covers Serie A on various shows. And he's also on Love Sport Radio. So, Richard, it's always a pleasure to have you on. Welcome back to Calcioland.
Hi, David. Always a pleasure to be back on here as well. So thank you very much for having me.
Terrific, Richard. So as I mentioned, this derby to me is very exciting because there are some big implications for the standings. The teams aren't quite yet in the Scudetto race, but at least both are in contention for a Champions League spot. So let's start big picture. And I've been asking a lot of our guests that cover various teams to simply grade the teams so far this season. So if you had to give a grade to both Milan and Inter for what they've done so far, what would they be?
It's an interesting question because if you're grading people, I suppose if you're looking at two students and you've got to do a grade on these, you've got two contrasts. I mean, you know, if you ask me this question before Christmas, I'm looking at Milan and thinking, you know, they're really not fulfilling any potential here, and maybe that's not all of their own, you know, that's not all their own fault in some respects. When you talk about the personnel and the team, a lot going on at that club, especially with the ownership. Obviously the implications of that, of what they could spend, you know, and it seems strange now to think there were a lot of questions about Gattuso at this time. Results and performances weren't particularly good, where, you know, you look across to the blue and black part of Milan and Inter on the contrary really looked like they had a really solid team, a good unit, started to perform well. Spalletti looked like he may just be finding a way to get them to play a little more expansive, a little bit more creative. You know, I was out in Milan in December against Frosinone and there was 60,000 there and it just felt good. The whole stadium, the whole vibe was good. But you fast forward to now and you've got two teams in completely different circumstances. You know, what Gattuso's done with Milan, he's extremely impressive. He's got a team and a unit that's playing for him. Piontek's scoring goals. They've rid of themselves of the Higuain problem, I would call it, personally. And they're looking probably a very strong favourite for the Champions League. Inter, on the flip side, you know, you're looking at Spalletti, who for me has... And this is not just Spalletti, but I think Inter as a club have mishandled their PR. They've got the Mario Cardi incident, should we call it. And not just that, I think they've dropped off. Issues in the midfield again. And there is a bit of a feeling now that, you know, they're an absolutely critical part of the season. So, you know, where I would have given Milan a 6 and Inter an 8, I'm going to switch those around. At this current moment in time, I'd put Milan on an 8 and Inter on a 6.
Okay. Yeah, I definitely agree. It's been a tale of two halves to the season for sure. So since you give Milan a higher grade, I'm going to start asking you about them first and then we'll get to Inter. So let me ask you very simply. You said Milan are in a great position for a Champions League spot. Let's just say, regardless of scenario, do you see any way where Gattuso isn't Milan's manager at the start of next season? And then let me ask you, what has stood out or impressed you about him in this season specifically?
Quite frankly, no. I don't see any reason why Gattuso wouldn't be the Milan coach next term. I mean, last season again, you know, if I refer to two games always that really made me just think that Gattuso wasn't just what many people in the media expected him to be, this blood and thunder coach that, you know, could rally the troops but potentially little else. The games against Roma and Sampdoria, he played some really good football, and you could see that he had a plan, he had a style of football he wanted to play. It was expansive, it was exciting, it was built on a very sound defence. And you know, you could tell that almost some of the coaches that he worked for before, you could see a little bit of that early Ancelotti in him in the sense of the way that Milan played at certain times. And so for me, there were the sparks there, but he was under difficult conditions. And I think that this season, the more, I say, a little bit more stable that Milan have become, he's also managed to really embrace what Milan are as a club. And I think because he has got the tactical nous and that he has started to play some good football, it's given him a bit of breathing room and he's started to really ingrain, and what's impressed me the most is he's really ingrained into that club what it is to play for Milan again. Baresi said, I think only today or yesterday, that Milan feel like they're back, and they do to an extent. You know, obviously the likes of Piontek coming on board in January has helped, but it's more than that. There's a lot of players in that squad who've really stepped up. And I think they're playing for him. And I think there's a lot to be said for that. So I think what has impressed me the most about Gattuso is that he stuck to his guns. And where I thought and many others thought that he may be quite an abrasive character, the players simply love him. And I think that's one of his biggest character traits and probably why he was so loved beforehand as a player. So, yeah, it's an exciting time for Milan.
So now let me ask you about two of the players that have really delivered results for him. And I think maybe surprisingly for different reasons. So I want to ask you about Calabria, the right back, and Bakayoko, the central midfielder. Tell me a little bit, out of the two, who has impressed you more and why? And in general, what has stood out to you about these two players?
I think, it's difficult. Calabria for me is just the most improved in a sense. He's one of those players who, you know, we've seen him for a while that he's always looked like he's had the ability. I mean, he is as well. He's Milan through and through. You know, he's only from Brescia up the road. He's always loved the club. But we've seen this so many times with players who promise so much and do so little. But I think what he's playing with now is a confidence that matches his technical ability. I think he's bright. And I think that when what Gattuso's done is really impressive. He's allowed players like this to make decisions and allowed them to make mistakes almost as well. And so because they're allowed to do that, they are allowed to grow. And I think that, you know, Calabria is one of the best examples of that. That no, he's not perfect, but he's getting the games in there now. And he's looking like the complete package. You know, you've got to think this guy's only 22 years old. He's got a long way to go. And it's exciting for him, you know. And so for me, I think that he has been probably the best player. One of the best defenders in that back line. And that's been impressive. And another one, you said Bakayoko, didn't you? He's now, I think that transformation is something that's quite baffling. That's harder to explain. Again, it probably goes, I'm giving Catuto a lot of credit here, aren't I? But it's a player who really was heavily criticised for not performing, for not looking even on the pace, almost looking disinterested. And it was almost like that the questions with him were, I think, really unfair, because people had seen him play, obviously, at Monaco and have such a fantastic season. And it was always attributed to, oh, he can only play around certain players like the likes of Fabinho, etc. And a lot of credit was taken away from him. And it was so much so that even at Chelsea, because he didn't perform well particularly, he was almost ripped apart. And for a player to be ripped apart, it wasn't just about the fact of, you know, this guy's not performing. It was almost like taking away his ability and the fact that he's no good unless he's alongside A, B or C player. But what's happened now, I think, coming back into the Milan fold and under Gattuso, what it's allowed him to do, again, is it's the same thing as Calabria in some respects. It's allowed him to be independent, allowed him to make mistakes, allowed him to enjoy his football again. And, you know, that seems to be an undertone of Gattuso's reign at Milan. And they've both been impressive.
Well said. So now let's talk about one of the two incredibly impactful additions in the January windows. And this is Piontek, who had gotten off to an incredible start at Genoa. Then Ballardini left, tailed off a little bit, and he's gotten off to a gangbuster start at Milan. So let me ask you, though, based on what, A, tell me what stands out to you about him, what you've seen so far. But how do you see him kind of developing in the next few seasons? I'm sure maybe even the most optimistic Milan fan couldn't expect him to quite keep that pace. So where do you see him settling in the future? And what has impressed you recently about him?
I think one of the most important things with Piontek this season and why it's so... One thing that I really have enjoyed about this is because we live in an age now where... Whether it's the fact, I know it sounds silly, but, you know, look at any child or even any man of 40. Everyone seems to be playing on the feet. You know, everyone's got FIFA 19. Everyone's playing Football Manager. Everyone has channels with millions of games on per week, it feels like. You know, you can watch the Dutch third division in the UK. You can watch the Colombian League. You can watch, you know, Scottish third division, all sorts. And so everyone seems to know every player. And I think that we lose something in football from maybe, I always remember when I was a child watching the 1990 World Cup and watching Kareka for the first time and going, when he rounded Goycochea and thinking, who the hell is this? You know, what is that sort of magical feeling? And we don't get that about a player. And that's what it sort of felt like with Piontek. I think that's why he's so liked by so many people, is because, you know, you've got to think at the beginning last season when we were all discussing probably, you know, what happened to Milan and Inter, you know, and last season, this guy is playing for Cracovia in Poland, you know, and no one knows who he is. Coming to Genoa and to be able to hit the ground running, as you rightly say, especially early on, those Coppa Italia goals giving him the confidence. He's turned everyone's head. And then, okay, he went up the boil again, but only for a short period of time. And to come in and hit the ground running like he has done at Milan is spectacular. And it gives you that feeling of it's the unknown. So when you ask how far could he go, I don't know. And I like the fact that I don't know. Because sometimes you can refer to the fact that this player, you know, oh, well, he did three seasons at Ajax and, you know, he's injury prone and I don't think he can really make the grade or whatever that might be. But with Piontek, it's like, I don't know, this guy could be, you know, I mean, you listen about his personality and Gattuso calls him Robocop. That all he says is goal. Where's the goal? You know, it's just, he seems so single-minded that this is a player that really excites me. And you know, we could be looking at someone at 23 years old here that if he stays at Milan, we could be seeing him score more than Van Basten, more than Shevchenko. He's that exciting. But likewise, we could see him disappear next season. He could be a one-season wonder. That's why it's exciting to watch him.
I like that answer. It's very good to say you don't know because, as you said, we really have no huge sample size. We don't know much about his background. So very well said. So now let's shift gears to enter, and a striker that we know a lot about, maybe too much about recently. And this is Mauro Icardi. And you hinted earlier that Inter has had a PR problem this season. And I agree with that. So very simply, how do you see this getting resolved and when, one way or the other?
I can actually keep this quite simple, bizarrely, because I'm going to take just anyone who's listening to this podcast will know everything that's happened up to now. And if we take that as a given, you can draw two conclusions from it. I think the first one is potentially that Inter have handled this terribly, in the sense of they took the captaincy off him probably too late. They've let this contract twice now get to a point where it's almost been at such a difficult position. And they've also allowed what seems to be a new way, should we say, to put it politely, of negotiating deals. And they've not been able to separate Icardi from the team. They did it well in the end. They managed to say, right, that's Icardi, the captain's no longer with you, this is the club. But they've not kept it in-house. It's been very difficult to do that, I understand. And I know I might get criticism for this, but credit to Wanda Nara in a sense, because if she was called Mina Raiola, we may be calling her a genius, because she keeps negotiating release clauses that within the time of football and how quickly money, prices get higher and higher, they become obsolete, and then he gets to negotiate a new deal. The way she's done it, and through social media and Instagram, I really hope isn't the way that future agents will be doing their business, but nothing would surprise me. So we're in a situation now where, okay, Inter have been blindsided by a completely bizarre and new way of doing business. But what do they do now? Now, it's hit a stalemate. Both parties are going to want to come out with this with their heads held high. I always think that from what I've read about Icardi, he's not like Robin Van Persie, for instance, who will sit down and watch, in his time off and watch this games in the Russian second division because he's interested. Icardi, apparently, he enjoys his family, he enjoys Milan, so he's got no major reason or want to move. But he's in a situation where he has to be taken back in by the club. It's happened before. He's got thick skin. He's done it when he had the issue with the ultras. So for me, Thursday and the weekend, Thursday, Sunday are key. There's all sorts of reports of where he was going to play, but they've interviewed Lautaro Martinez out for Thursday, and obviously the derby's the derby. He has a chance now to consolidate to talk to Inter in some way and say, look, enough's enough. I want to come back. I want to play. Whatever deal's on the table, if he takes it or he doesn't, he's got a chance to almost instantaneously redeem himself. Because if I'm talking to you next Monday, Icardi's come on and played in the Europa League, got Inter through against Frankfurt and scored the winner in the derby, the world looks a different place. I feel, though, if he doesn't play in either of those games, it feels like it's the end, because it can't rumble on. There needed to be a break point, and I think that's already here. It's difficult because, obviously, a player of that ilk and that quality is something that Inter won't want to lose. But the whole scenario at the moment has to come to some sort of conclusion. So, that's only my opinion, my thought process. But for me, if I'm looking at it from the Icardi camp and the Inter camp, there's a real chance here to say, look, you know what? This is the time when you can come back. It's a key point of the season because, let's face it, Milan aren't going to want to face Icardi in the derby, no matter what situation or what mood he's in, because no matter what mood he's in, he always scores goals.
Yeah. Very well said, and I'm glad you pointed out when we're recording this, because in this saga with Inter and Icardi, so much can change in the span of a few hours. So now, let's talk about the other striker on Inter, Lautaro Martinez, and I think he's made the most out of the opportunity with Icardi out in a lot of ways. So let me ask you very simply, do you see them as two players that can play together, or ultimately it's one or the other?
I personally think they can play together. I think there's a lot to be said for the... I think soon we'll see more and more. I mean, football goes in cycles. It wouldn't surprise me if we start seeing more and more striking partnerships start to return again. First time I saw Martinez was very early in the season. He's actually in the UK against Sheffield United in a pre-season game. And they played him for most part of that game with Icardi. And he looked like he could... It looked like there was almost like an instantaneous... thought process between the two. I don't see why not, because Martinez, I mean, I interviewed Sam Kelly, who's an Argentinian football journalist in Buenos Aires, about Martinez at the beginning of the season, and he said that he can play in numerous positions. He can play a little bit deeper as a 10. But the interesting thing he said as well is that both players have been coached by Diego Milito. So both have very similar characteristics. And Lautaro Martinez also quite idolizes Mauro Icardi as well. So for me, I think that's a positive, because it means you've got two players. Perhaps you could argue they're too similar in some respects, but I think with Martinez, when you watch him, he does like to come a little bit deeper for the ball. I think he has got a bit more of a burst of speed on him at times. He likes to run at players a little bit. And I think that, you know, if he did play slightly off Icardi, it could be great. But just as you said, David, I think you've got to credit what Martinez has done since he's come in. And I think that in hindsight, you know, whatever happens now, taking a long-term view with Inter, the game time he's had now will only be a benefit whether Icardi stays or whether he goes.
Okay, so now let's talk about the midfield for Inter. You know, Nainggolan certainly hasn't lived up to expectations. He's injured again right now. So tell me of the landscape on Inter. Which of the current ones on the squad right now do you see as long-term starters, or even just next season? Which ones do you think are going to have an important role for Inter moving forward?
I struggle with Inter's midfield a lot because sometimes you get this with football clubs, but you know, you can look at whether under Moratti, under Tahir, under Sanning, all the coaches that go through as well, they've always had a problem with the midfield, whether it's finding that creative hub. It's never worked. And you know, you can go back to Kondogbia, Banega, you can go back even further and, you know, list them. And it's frustrating because they all seem to make the same mistakes. Inter struggle. The ball always gets lost in midfield quite often and slowed down. So they never really play at pace. There are signs of it, though. I think you're right. Nainggolan was meant to be that sort of engine, that powerhouse in the midfield that would be able to drive forward and try and change that. And it hasn't worked out. I think it's unfortunate. And I don't think that there's any way that Inter could have known of how well Nicolò Zaniolo would do at Roma. So I think it's always infuriates Inter fans because they can see a talented player actually being creative at Roma. But I think you've got to discount that because it was unlikely that he would make that step up so quick. Nainggolan, I don't know at the moment. You know, if anyone was going to get a tune out of him, it seemed like it would be Spalletti. So if he's not doing it, I don't really see how that's going to work. I think Brozovic, again, you know, when you're looking at the types of players like Brozovic, Pacino, I really like Gagliardini. I think that he could be more of a long-term prospect. I just wish he'd realised more of his potential. The problem I think Inter have got is that you could argue that Brozovic, obviously, of course, has got more offensive qualities, but a lot of these players are the same type of player in some respects. While they all have different skill sets, they all do like to get the ball, they like to look, take some time and play at a tempo that's not really particularly where we saw the ball moved as quickly for, say, Spalletti's Roma. So I think with Inter at the moment, it's you know, the two problems that have frustrated them for years are slowing the ball down in the midfield and also getting enough goals from the wide players. And that doesn't just look to be being fixed at the moment. So it's going to be interesting to see how that works out. I do think they need an addition in there. For me, I think Pacino and Nainggolan, I can't really see them too much going forward. I mean, it depends on Nainggolan if he continues to be injured, if he can actually get a good run in the team. I'd like to see that for a small amount of time at least. But as I said before, he might not be the most popular choice, but Gagliardini and, of course, Brozovic, I think, could probably offer the most.
I agree with that. And let the record note that you brought up Zaniolo. I was trying not to bring him up before the derby, but you did. So said there.
It's hand in hand with Nainggolan, isn't it, at the moment? So.
Yeah, I guess so. All right, so now before we get your predictions and the things to look for in the derby, let me close on Inter's coach. We talked at the top about Gattuso, and I'm with you. There's really no scenario in my mind, even if Milan completely falls apart the rest of the way, which I don't see happening, but even if it did, he did enough. But let's talk about Spalletti, on the other hand. If you had to gamble, you know, do you think he'll be Inter's coach next season? What are the reasons to be mostly optimistic or maybe mostly pessimistic in his case?
It's so difficult. I'll take a sort of overall view, I suppose, because like I said before, you know, if Inter turned around, if we're talking on Monday and Inter have won two games by then, the world looks a different place. We talk on Monday and Icardi's played a game, the world looks different. But if as it is now, I think Spalletti, what he has shown is that, unfortunately, because I'm a big fan of Spalletti, so that I want to put that on the table first. But and that's why it pains me to say even more that I think we've had the issues where there's rumblings, and obviously no one really knows, but there's the how that relationship has started off with Beppe Marotta, which is always, you know, that as soon as there starts to be rumblings about that, it's never a good sign because there's always some sort of smoke there, you know. But then it's difficult because he's not handled players like Totti before, which is the obvious example when you go to the big egos, the big players at the club particularly well. And you just wonder if that's going to be another variation with Icardi this time. So you can look at his management skills in that sense. I don't think he's changed the team enough in the sense of what he's getting out of them. I think that it's frustrating because whilst sometimes they can look quite organised and even every so often play with some tempo, not often, they revert to type too much. And he doesn't seem to be able to fix that. I think that it's going to be intrinsically linked to whether they make the Champions League. I think he'll look at Inter at the end of this campaign, even if they've gone out to Frankfurt and they met the Champions League, you could look at it and think, well, it's been a bit of a strange season with the Icardi saga and various different factions, as it always is with Inter. So for me, maybe you should expect that. But I think you could call it a success. Then you've got to push on from there again. And that's it, really. But right this moment in time, I've just said that, you know, Milan are looking good. If Inter don't make the Champions League, and depending on the outcome of the Icardi saga, I could even see Spalletti walking, in fairness, at some point. I think that, you know, you can't just put it all on a coach. I think that even he will have his tolerances. And, I mean, my God, we've seen enough coaches baffled by what is the crazy world that is Inter. So, yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting one. But I really wouldn't want to bet a lot of money on him being there next season.
Yeah, I'm with you there. For me, it's more likely than not. And there's really a lot of variables with him. So well said there. So now let's close on the game itself. Let me ask you, what are some of the matchups that you're looking specifically that you think are kind of going to be keys to the match? And then let's close with what your prediction is going to be for the game.
I think the two interesting ones with the derby for me are, and I know it's a bit of a strange one, but I always look at the goalkeepers in these games. I think that, you know, both Handanovic and Donnarumma are many, many years apart, but I do sometimes think there's a similarity mentally. You know, both of them have got the ability to be absolute match winners. Both of them can look more confident than anything, but then both of them also have errors in them as well. Often these errors come in fairly big games for both of them. Few and far between, but they still do. So I always like to keep an eye on that. I think that obviously in some of these games when they are tight, how many times has Handanovic saved into this season? Likewise, Donnarumma can just pull off something brilliantly. So that'll be interesting. And then I do think, again, I go revert back. It's, we've talked in detail about Piontek and that ridiculous run he's on and goal-scoring run. And if it is going to be Lautaro Martinez, you know, that's a big challenge there. You know, he's played well. Talk about having an opportunity, if Icardi isn't in the team, to really make your mark. I think it will be a battle of the forwards. So, you know, I mean, yes, we could talk about the midfield, and that there's also millions of smaller details and battles in there. But for me, it's the main positions in some respects, the goalkeepers, and the centre forward. And I think that it'll be really interesting. It looks like, obviously, with Piontek, the Milan may be a little stronger for this game. But you never know. Martinez may choose it as his time to really introduce himself on the main stage for Inter.
Okay, I'm going to put you on the spot. What's your prediction for the score, if you had to put one?
after all that build up, probably 1-1 and a terrible game. But
which kind of has been the standard in recent years, it feels.
Yeah, I could see it being close. I don't think it's one of those. I mean, I'm not watching it be proved wrong now. It's so difficult to predict a derby, especially, you know, both teams going for something like the Champions League in this way. I could see it being tight. I don't think any of the teams are infallible. So I will stick with that 1-1. I think that's Milan having the better of the game.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. That's my prediction as well. So, Richard, as always, such a pleasure to chat with you. Thank you for your amazing insight. If you've enjoyed Richard, if you're based in the U.S., definitely check him out on his appearances on SiriusXM on the radio. If you enjoy reading football, his work on Football Italia is top-notch. His site, Gentleman Ultra, is really terrific. So thanks again, Richard, for joining me. I promise that we won't wait as long to have you back because, as usual, you were brilliant. So thanks again.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Dave. It's always a pleasure on here. And can I just say, great work with this show and everything else you do. This been. Did you hear, was it, how many episodes is this now?
It's been 203.
Fantastic. They've been absolutely brilliant as well. So congratulations for that. And here's to many more.
Thanks so much. That's the episode for today. I want to take a moment to thank our loyal listeners. You guys are the best co-writers for the podcast that I could have with your questions. If you have one for the next podcast, remember to tweet us with the CalcioLand hashtag. As you know, we'll take questions on Serie A, transfers, Champions League during that time of the year. You know, I love the questions on pop cultures, music, TV, films. Keep them coming. You have questions on podcasting and journalism. Please send them our way with the CalcioLand podcast. Not only are you guys co-writers of the podcast with me, you are also our marketing department. This is a completely free podcast. We rely on your support to grow. So if you dig what you hear, please tweet the link to our podcast. Tell your followers about what we do. And I say it all the time, but those reviews on iTunes really help us grow. It takes 2 seconds to leave us a 5-star rating. If you leave a comment, you know, I always read them. I think that is really the best compliment you can give us. So thanks for your support, and we look forward to chatting with you next time.